Singing that Hold the Fort, that one part where it says cheer your comrades down at Brother Mangus' church down in Kentucky. When they'd get to that part, they'd start yelling and screaming. But boy, that was a good church. Amen. But the guy now that's in charge of it's making sure every memory of Brother Mangus is removed totally. So, okay, Psalm 102 is where we're at. And let's go ahead and pray. Lord, I do pray you'd help us to, as we approach this holy book, that we have minds that might see clearly what you want us to see. And Lord, I do pray you'd help us to understand this book, rightly divide it properly. Help us to realize that it just doesn't focus on this place in the year 2009. It covers many, many years in other places. And help us to accept that fact and then know what we can apply to ourselves in these days. In Jesus' name, amen. Okay, Psalm 102. This psalm, like many others, the only sure way you're going to figure it out, to understand it, is to look at it from a doctrinal viewpoint. And I realize that's like a broken record when we go through the Psalms. It's just constantly coming up about the second coming of Christ, and it's almost always talking about the tribulation time period. And so if you don't understand the prophecies of Daniel, Daniel's 70 weeks, if you don't understand some of the layout of the Bible, then it's going to be rather confusing, and or it's just going to be, it's not going to mean anything to you. And so chronologically, when you look at the Bible laid out chronologically, it kind of gives a script of history and prophecy. Now, back there, Mike Pearl has laid out some things for the book of Revelation chronologically. And that's a helpful thing. Clarence Larkin has many good books, or a couple good books on rightly dividing the scriptures, and that's helpful also. But when you run through your Bible like this, flipping through it real quickly, it's like somebody pushing the fast forward button on the script, on the show, on the DVD. Old Testament, okay, Genesis, right here, you're dealing about 1400 BC. Okay, right at the beginning, it goes quick. It goes from, you know, the creation to the flood just in the first 10 chapters. I mean, you're going 2,000 years in 10 chapters. And then when you fast forward through your Bible, you're coming through here. Like, here's Nehemiah, you're around 500 B.C. Then you get to Malachi, you're 400 B.C. Then you get to Matthew, Mark, Luke, and John, you're around 30 A.D., around there. And then you get to Acts, you're running from 30 to 60. Then you get Paul's writings. Paul's writings is a church age, so you're running anywhere from 60 A.D. to 2009. Then you get into Hebrews, and you're jumping into the future. James, you're jumping into the future. Same with 1st and 2nd Peter, 1st, 2nd, 3rd John, Jude, and Revelation. You're all jumping into the future. Okay, that's a very simple way to look at the Bible. But throughout any show or a movie or whatnot, sometimes in a movie they'll give you some things that you need to know further in the show, so they'll push you into the future, or sometimes they'll push you into the past. And the Bible's just like that. Okay, so Psalms 102, you want to keep that in mind as you read through here, and you ask yourself two questions. Who's talking? To whom is he talking? Okay, and sometimes it's not clear, except for reading the word. Psalm 102, right under the title Psalm 102, there's a little statement in there. You'll find that in many of the older Bibles. You won't find it in the new Bibles. But it says, a prayer of the afflicted when he is overwhelmed and poureth out his complaint before the Lord. Okay, it's like a little preview of what you're going to read. So here's what this person's doing. He says, verse 1, hear my prayer, O Lord, and let my cry come unto thee. Okay, now again, I've taught this many times, said it several times as we're going through the Psalms. There's no use repeating it constantly. But when we come through the verse, we'll mention it. Won't go through it in detail. To me, that's the best way to teach the Bible, is verse by verse, because then you stay on priority. You see, some churches are so out of whack. If you go there, all you're going to hear is hush on tie, tie, bow tie. You know, the Church of God of Prophecy. What are you going to hear all the time? You see, Baptist Church. What are you going to hear all the time? Building budgets and baptisms. You see, they're out of balance. And so when you go verse by verse, you're running through the Bible and you're staying in balance. Okay? And so, hear my prayer, just like any old prayer. And then he says, cry. That is a verbal yelling and begging of God. Out loud. Okay, again, Esther chapter 4, verse 1 is a footnote there about crying unto God. Okay, and let's see if I got it there. See, I don't even have it there. Okay, because it occurs so much in the Psalms, you can't put the same cross-reference in there. If I put the same cross-reference and loaded this with all the cross-references every time it showed up, the font in the center margin would be like 1. And you'd have to have a magnifying glass to find it. And so you got to try to pick and choose some of these things. And often what I try to do is, maybe the first time that word or thought came up, that's where I usually put the first comments. So Esther chapter 4, verse 1 is a place where there's more information about crying out unto God. Okay, again, that has been covered several times in the Psalms. So there's no use going over it, over it, over it, over it again and again. Okay, verse 2, he says, hide not thy face from me in the day when I am in trouble. Okay, now, obviously Americans think that they're in trouble when the air conditioning goes out. You know, we're really suffering for Jesus. Okay, Americans are just so soft. Okay, now doctrinally, who's in trouble? Okay, after going through the Psalms this far, if you don't got to figure it out, I mean, we need to get back in the C-spot run type figuring it out. Okay, who's in trouble? The trouble is Jacob's trouble. So we're dealing with a Jew in the tribulation begging God. Another clue on that is the first half of that statement where he says about, hide not thy face from me. That idea about God hiding his face from Israel, I do believe was first recorded in Deuteronomy 31, about 17, and I probably have a bunch of cross references there because that is probably the first time. And the key on getting these references down pat is if you could memorize the first occurrence and then you can run there and have that in your mind and then run that throughout the scriptures. The way you get these references down pat is that when you see a cross-reference or something that you could write in the margin, okay, the Spirit of God brings up another reference, you go to that reference, write that reference down, go to the other one, write the other reference down, and flip it back, and then if you find a third one, you write all the other two in the other two places, and that's how you start getting in your head. Okay, and then once you kind of got it in your head or your heart, the Spirit of God is the one who will pull it up when you need it. He's like the master computer technician where he pushes the right button and here it shows up. So Deuteronomy 31, 17, then my anger shall be kindled against them, Israel, in that day, tribulation, and or historically when they turn their back on God, and I will forsake them and I will hide my face from them. Okay, at the word hide there, you can run to the margins and you see all those cross references. Now, as you can see, I don't have in the middle Psalm 102, verse 2. So, boom, you can write that right in there. So, this is how you start on your own reference Bible. So, you write that in a margin, then you got some more references. Now, I have written beside it Psalm 14, 4, Jeremiah 30, verse 7, because you can throw that with the word trouble in verse 17. Jeremiah 30, verse 7 is a reference to Jacob's trouble. So it says, I will hide my face from them, and they shall be devoured. Doctrinally, they shall be devoured, eaten, as in the tribulation. And that's why I put Psalm 14, 4 there, because that verse says, have all the workers of iniquity no knowledge who eat up my people as they eat bread. And then when you go to Psalm 14, 4, you see a bunch of cross-references that run you all over the place about cannibalism in the tribulation time period. Okay, so it's all laid out there. And it says, many evils and troubles shall befall them, Israel, so that they will say, in that day are not these evils come upon us because our God is not among us. Okay, and so Deuteronomy 31 and then 32 is the song of Moses. Okay, and so this is where this is one of the first times it's mentioned that God said, I am going to hide my face from you, even when you are in trouble. And when you are in trouble, since you have mocked me for years and years, when you are in trouble, I will turn around and mock you. You will reap what you sow. For many years, as I was, know about tribulation time period and know that God was judging Israel, I thought for many years that, God, being a merciful God, was shedding tears, while he's judging Israel, spanking them during that tribulation time period, until you come up with Deuteronomy 28:63 about him rejoicing over them to destroy them as he rejoiced over them to do them good. And then you read Psalm 1 or 2 about him laughing at them, and then in Proverbs 1 about him laughing at them, and you get a different viewpoint. Why is that? Well, it's because we are stuck in this one little 1 billionth or 1 of 6 billion in this little drop in a bucket. And so we don't hear all the mocking of God. And he hears it all. And you're just getting sick of it. And so he starts to put it back on them. Okay, so Psalm 102, verse 2, hide not thy face from me in the day when I am in trouble. Okay, doctrinally, tribulation time period. Okay, history, practically. When a nation is in trouble, that's when all prohibitions against prayer will be lifted. Nobody called the ACLU when them two knuckleheads were shooting them up in Columbine. The students were hiding under the chairs and under the desk who were praying out to God. Nobody has called ACLU to sue the student and the people for praying in public school when the bullets were flying. Okay, and so when man gets desperate, if all else fails, pray. Now, often God will intervene at those times, but if it becomes a constant habit, God gets sick of that too. He gets tired of repenting. He gets sick of it, and so would you and I. You remember that one time where the Lord said to the disciples about forgiving your brothers? And then they said, well, how often are you going to forgive them? Seven times? He said, I tell you 70 times seven. And in unison, they said, increase our faith. If somebody wrongs you seven times in the same day, and that's what he said, wouldn't you get tired of saying, okay, I accept your apology? You see, but that's what the Lord is saying. Several years ago, I preached a message about that, and I portrayed it as some guy where his mother-in-law came and stayed at his house, and then she, and Sandy Marlin laughed through the entire message. Sandy Marlin, she's a lady, Chuck and Sandy, they moved down in Missouri, but she is a perfect individual to have whenever you tell jokes because she laughs at every one of them. I don't care how many times she heard it. And it's funny, she was laughing during church, and Bill Reese was sitting in the back, and he was about rolling off the pew because he was laughing at her. About like me as a kid when I would laugh at my grandpa when he would watch Candid Camera on Sunday night when we'd go over there after church. I laughed not so much at Candid Camera, I laughed at grandpa because he was laughing at Candid Camera. Okay, so verse 2, hide not thy face from me in the day when I am in trouble. Okay, the last major trouble that America was in was the Great Depression as a nation. And that's about the last time the church doors were full without having to give them a hot dog or a watermelon. Okay, and Americans were desperate. So then he says, incline thine ear unto me. Okay, the person who is praying is asking God to bend his ear down to him and listen to him. In the day when I call, answer me speedily. Now, of course, that is always our take on it. I'm in a hurry, God. Please answer my prayer. And I realize that you're never in a hurry, but I'm still asking you to answer my prayer in a hurry. You know, God, give me patience, and I want the patience right now. You know, that's a typical thing. That's about like a guy saying, I'm proud of my humility and how I attained it, you know, writing an autobiography. Okay, so he's asking him to answer me speedily. Okay, and obviously that's from our perspective. Verse 3, for my days are consumed like smoke, and my bones are burned as an hearth. Okay, this idea of my days or life is like smoke is also repeated over in verse 11. My days are like a shadow that declineth, and I am withered like grass. Back in verse 3, his days are like smoke, and in verse 4, my heart is smitten and withered like grass. So we have both places where he is comparing himself to be withered like grass, a lack of rain, and in both places he refers to his life being short, very short, like smoke, like a shadow, very brief life. And does that not ring a bell with another place in the New Testament, in the same book, in a letter written by James, where he says, is not your life like a vapor? James 4, verse 14. And backwards in James chapter 1, verse 9, 10, 11, he compares man to grass that's withering. So this is how you put books in the Bible together. So if you take Psalm 102 and then keep the Epistle of James in mind, you go back and forth and you're going to find tribulation doctrine. When you read James, you see that all the rich men, all the rich people in the book of James are damned. And because the only way to get rich in the tribulation is to take the mark of the beast. James 5 verse 3, it says it's written to the last days. So you take Psalm 102, throw in the letter that James wrote to the tribes that are scattered throughout the world, and you come up with Bible doctrine. Then you can throw in Lamentations, which is a 5-chapter book after Jeremiah. Again, probably the greatest book in the Bible, showing the doctrinal picture of Jews in the tribulation. And as we continue to read down through Psalm 102, we will see that this individual is starving to death. Okay, and so his heart is smitten. Okay, his bones are burned. His heart is smitten, verse 4. He's withered like grass, so that I forget to eat my bread. Now, that's real fasting. Most fasting that we do is, if a person does it, obviously most Americans fasting is fast food, but when a person does choose to fast, most of our fasting is a matter of the will. But prayer and fasting in the Bible is you are so burdened that you cannot eat. You have no desire to eat. Most of the time when I fast, I want to eat. I tell my body, you shouldn't eat, but boy, does that look good. And okay, I'm going to go 24 hours, but you know, if the Spirit moves, I might go 20. You know, if it looked really good. If I'm only doing it for physical reasons, maybe I can break it. But if it's spiritual reasons, okay, I won't break it. You know, whatnot. Okay, but this is a Bible fast and prayer is where you have, like this person, he forgets to eat his bread. He's really burdened. That's why he's crying out in verse 1. He's running for his life. And no doubt, if you and I were running for our lives, we'd be burdened also. Verse 5, by reason of the voice of my groanings, my bones cleave to my skin. He's starving to death. Like in Lamentations chapter 2, verse 20, where it says that women will eat the fruit of their own body. The fruit is a span long. Their baby, their child is a preemie, is born dead, obviously, 9 inches long, and they're starving to death, so they turn around and eat it. Okay, and this has happened in the past. Is it wrong for them to do that? If it's already dead, I don't have a problem with it. Well, I sort of kind of do. But if you're starving to death, I tell you, do anything. But a lot of times, you know, people just don't know what they can eat, but they're just starving to death. And of course, the Bible gives cases like this. So again, this person is, their bones are cleaving to my skin. Of course, you see any pictures of Holocaust victims, you can see that laid right out in front of you. Verse 6, I am like a pelican of the wilderness. Now, I thought pelicans were by the water, but obviously it's thirsty. I am like an owl of the desert. Okay, an owl, I know, is an unclean bird, and an owl, the cross-reference I have there going to Isaiah 34, often is a portrayal of unclean spirits. The wise old owl. Okay, we have a secret society in America called the in the world called the Illuminati. It began May 1st, 1776, to parallel the Christianity in America. So in America, you have Satanism and Christianity running side by side. The founders of the Illuminati, Mr. Rothschild and his cohorts, wanted America to be the next Atlantis. So if you talk about this conspiracy stuff, you know, Rush Limbaugh will tag you as a wacko. Council on Foreign Relations. Well, Ms. Hillary Clinton just recently has admitted that they do what the CFR tells them to do. And they now have an office in Washington, D.C., and she joked and said, well, at least we don't have to go so far to be told what to do. Shadow government, okay? What do some of these insiders do? What do these great world leaders do? They go to the Bohemian Grove out there in Redwood Forest of California and worship a 40-foot statue of an owl. The all-wise owl, the illumined one, the Illuminati. The owl was a representative, or was like the pagan god Molech. No new things under the sun. The New Age movement is not a new age. It's been going on for years. It's just a repeat. You see, and so we have an owl mentioned here as an example of a tribulation time period. Then you go to Isaiah 34, which describes the turning of Saudi Arabia into hell fire during the tribulation, or at the end of the tribulation, and he portrays a bunch of unclean birds. Okay, so verse 7, he says, I watch and am as a sparrow alone upon the housetop. Now, most sparrows are always running around, you know, or not just one, but that's how he feels. Now, the idea of a sparrow is mentioned two or three times by Jesus Christ. And he says, you know, something like that, God's eye is on the sparrow and you are so much better than the birds. And that verse I always kind of thought about when I was always tearing down the sparrow nest out of the tool shed when I was growing up, and, you know, wait till the birds got, you know, just before their feathers got on there, because the dogs didn't want to get the feathers caught in the throat. And so, you know, it's nice and tender, and you get about four or five of them out of the nest, and you just throw them in the ground, and that dog, you know, one go, you know. And I always thought about that verse about God looking on the sparrows, and I'm down here. Yeah. Okay, and so you say, why'd you do that? Well, he's always trying to buy the equipment, putting down payments on it, so we didn't like that. And plus all the lice that comes out of their nest. And so I'd always think about that. My dog really liked it when I did it, but it's a free meal for him. But there it is. I watch and am as a sparrow alone upon the housetop. Verse 8, mine enemies reproach me all the day. Okay, specifically, historically, or doctrinally, the enemies of the Jews, the Edomites, the religion is Muslims. You know, obviously the American news media is doing all they can to try to portray the Muslim faith as a religion of peace. Obama just put two very adamant Muslims in the Homeland Security. That's wonderful. Appreciate that. Okay, and anybody that's got a, you know, little sense in their head knows that when the Muslim faith dominates a nation, religious liberty is gone. Just try to find a Baptist church in Saudi Arabia. Just go there and try to find one. Now, in our, quote, Christian nation, we allow their faith, but they don't allow our faith. Oh, they say, oh, you have freedom of religion in Saudi Arabia. No, you have freedom from religion. You don't have a choice. There's a difference between having a freedom of or a freedom from. You see? And so, yeah, whenever that religion is dominating, it will be nothing but tyranny from top to bottom. And you by their fruits you shall know them. That is the faith that is being pushed and infiltrated all around the world. Like in Australia. Robert told me in Australia that a rugby team was charged with a massive rape case. And one of the guys that was a ringleader was a Muslim. And they knew that the guy was guilty, and they requested DNA from him to prove his guilt. And no, you can't do that. It's against my religion. Gets off scot-free because they don't want to offend the Muslim faith. Now, you can offend Christian faith all you want, but it's that Muslim faith. And that's the faith that's going to be killing the Jews in the tribulation. And that's the faith that wants to kill you and I. Now, that doesn't give us a right to want to kill them. No, that's not even any issue. Our plan is to win them to Jesus Christ. The Muslim faith are killing the Christians in the Sudan right and left, but you'll never find the Christians killing the Muslims, except in self-defense. You see? And so that's the faith that's... And isn't it interesting that the favorite mode of execution in tribulation... beheading, that's the faith. Not the guillotine, you know, like Thief in the Night and all those wonderful films had in the past, you know, where they had the guillotine. Forget the guillotine. The Muslim faith don't do it that way. They take a sword or a knife or a saw and whack it off. And I saw a picture, Voice of the Martyrs have, you know, it's like a magazine that does a lot with persecution around the world. And I saw a picture of I don't know if it's a lady or a man, I forget now, that it was a failed beheading attempt. The scars in the back of their neck, deep scars. And I don't know what stopped it, but something stopped it. Oh, man, I just can't imagine the pain that this person went through. Okay, and so this individual who's praying, mine enemies reproach me all the day. They that are mad against me are sworn against me. For I have eaten ashes like bread and mingled my drink with weeping. Okay, the eating of ashes and the mingling of my drink, it's like they reap what they sow because Jesus was on the cross, and what do? They gave him vinegar to drink mingled with gall. And they're going to drink the gall, Lamentation says. And then why is he going through this persecution? Verse 10, because of thine, God's, indignation and thy wrath, for thou, God, hast lifted me up and cast me down. Okay, this individual knows why they're facing the persecution. It's because of the wrath of God. And Revelation chapter 15, verse 7 and 8 mentions that the wrath of God is filled up in those seven vials. And that is what the tribulation time period is about. It's about God pouring out his wrath on the nation of Israel because they said 2,000 years ago, let his blood be upon us and our children. And God said, so be it. And so that's what the tribulation time period is all about. Thank God that the church is gone. Okay, thank God for that. It's never called the church's trouble, and it picks up doctrine under the Daniel 70 weeks, so it has to revert back to Old Testament doctrine with the variation because it's after Calvary, and that's what the book of Hebrews is all about. Okay, verse 11, we read that. He said, my days are like a shadow that declineth, I am withered like grass, but thou, O Lord, shalt endure forever. And thy remembrance unto all generations. So when he focuses upon his God, even though he's going through this tragic situation, and is under the wrath of God, whenever a person focuses upon God, it gives them encouragement. It blesses them. And so what is he looking forward to? Verse 13, thou shalt arise. He's looking for the second coming. Like a sunrise. He's looking for the morning to come. He's looking for the greatest doctrine of the Bible, for Jesus Christ to come back. Thou shalt arise and have mercy upon Zion. Israel, the Holy One of Israel. He's going to have mercy on them. For the time to favor her, yea, the set time is come. Millennial time period. That's what he's hoping for. The restoration of the nation of Israel, coupled with the second coming of Christ. Okay, verse 14, for thy servants take pleasure in her stones and favor the dust thereof. Okay, taking pleasure in the persecution, as in James 1, my brethren, count it all joy when you fall into diverse temptations. That's a weird statement, but that's what he said. So the heathen shall fear the name of the Lord, and all the kings of the earth thy glory. Okay, the heathen, obviously, you run that throughout the Bible. Heathen, Gentiles, stranger, foreigner, alien. All synonymous terms. Okay, describing you and me. Strangers of the covenants of promise. Ephesians chapter 2. So that's how the Bible writes about Gentiles. Gentiles, heathen, strangers, foreigners, aliens. Those are all Bible terms. Okay, and that's what he's referring to us. So the Gentiles are going to fear the name of the Lord. Okay, the fear of the name of the Lord, probably Revelation 14, 6 and 7. That's the everlasting kingdom, the everlasting gospel, where it says, fear God and give glory to him. Okay, and then it says, and all the kings of the earth thy glory. Okay, when the Lord shall build up Zion, he shall appear in his glory. Second coming, building up Zion, Jerusalem is restored. Israel restored to its kingdom. Israel becomes flames. The Edomites become stubble. Obadiah, verse 17 to 21. So this person asking God, crying out to God, telling about all his trouble, but then in verse 13, the typical a person's response when we get in trouble, oh, I wish a rapture would take place. Man, I'd love to get out of here. And there's a crown that's given to the ones who love his appearing, but if we were honest, we'd rather love our disappearing rather than his appearing. Okay, but we still want to, you know, I'd love to see the Lord get the glory that's due him. Then he says, verse 17, he will regard the prayer of the destitute and not despise their prayer. Okay, the destitute, poor and needy. You'll find that in James 2. The poor and needy, the destitute, the poor. The poor, he has chosen the poor of this world, rich in faith. The cross-reference I have in that one by the word destitute, Matthew 25, 34 to 40, that's reference to the judgment of the nations where the Lord is judging the nations, separating the sheep from the goats, and the ones who are the sheep are the ones who visited the Jews while they were in prison, while they were poor, while they were naked. Okay, that's the destitute he's talking about. I think it's Isaiah 60, verse 4, where he refers to Israel as desolate. I think it's 60, verse 4. Nope. 64:4, 62:4, I know it's one of them four, 62:4, okay, where he refers to Israel as the term forsaken and the term desolate, and both those terms are capital forsaken, capital F, and capital desolate, okay, so as far as the D goes. So he will regard the prayer of the destitute and not despise their prayer. Verse 18, this shall be written for the generation to come. Okay, forewarning, as was Deuteronomy, and the people which shall be created shall praise the Lord. Okay, again, future. For he hath looked down from the height of his sanctuary, from heaven did the Lord behold the earth, to hear the groaning of the prisoner. Okay, that's why the Matthew 25 passage is used, because they're in prison. Psalm 72, I think it's about when he was in prison. Not the right one. Hear the sighing of the prisoner. Okay. somewhere. Okay, let's see. To hear the groaning of the prisoner. I probably got a cross-reference there. I do. 79:11. Right there it is. Okay, and so that's the one. That's the Jews in prison who's waiting. Well, as it says here, those that are appointed to death, they have the death sentence put on them. So they're waiting in prison to be executed, most likely to be executed in a religious ceremony, to catch their blood, drink it, and then eat their flesh. Okay, and people say we're more civilized than that. Don't count on it. We don't know what goes on behind closed doors of world officials. If they did it 2,000 years ago, don't tell me we've gotten better. We've gotten much worse. Okay, so behind the scenes, to loose those that are appointed to death. Verse 21, to declare the name of the Lord in Zion and his praise in Jerusalem. Okay, so again, the restoration of Israel, the restoration of Jerusalem. When the people are gathered together and the kingdoms to serve the Lord. Okay, when the people are gathered together, second coming. And the kingdoms, all these kingdoms will be given to Jesus Christ. He will take them, Revelation chapter 11, verse 15, around that range, where he will conquer all world kingdoms, and then everyone will serve the Lord, second coming. Verse 23, he weakeneth my strength in the way, he shorteneth my days. That goes along with verse 11 and verse 3 about your life is like a vapor. And then he says, I said, O my God, that's real praying, crying out to God, O my God, take me not away in the midst of my days. He's gone on because it's a short time span. Thy years are throughout all generations. Of old thou hast laid the foundation of the earth, and the heavens are the work of thy hands. And then he says about the heavens, they shall perish. They shall perish. Now this is where people talk about the end of the world. You know, where you see some of the, you know, Christians in the past where they have high water pants, striped pants, plaid shirt, and they'd have to hold the sign, the world is coming to an end. You know, and I had a guy down at Purdue one time came up to me and said, oh, I suppose you think the world's coming to an end soon. I said, oh no, you got over 1,000 years. He goes, oh, at least you're not one of them nuts. I said, I'm a nut, but not one of those nuts. You know, but yeah, the idea of the end of the world, no, we got over 1,007 years for that. Okay, and this idea, the world perishing, where has that shown up in the Bible? Well, that verse right there is repeated in Hebrews 1, verse 10, 11, and 12. Okay, now, the one in Hebrews is a New Testament translation of the Old Testament that doesn't match the original. It's better than the original, but it's telling about the future. And it's talking about the end of the world, which takes place at the end of the millennium. The heavens and the earth shall perish, even though J.W. doesn't think so. They shall perish, but thou, God himself, shall endure. Yea, all of them shall wax old like a garment, as a vesture shalt thou change them, and they shall be changed. This is why the northern lights are referred to as a curtain. Okay, and so the heavens and the earth are falling apart, getting older. And then verse 27, for thou art the same, and thy years shall have no end. Thou art the same sounds to me like it's very close to Hebrews 13:8. Jesus is the same yesterday, today, and forever. So that goes with Hebrews 13. So if you take verse 26 to 27, throw in the letter of the Hebrews that Paul wrote to the Hebrews, now you've got James and Hebrews and Lamentations, and you put all these together and you come up with some Bible doctrine for the tribulation. And this is what God expects from us when you rightly divide the word of truth. And when you rightly divide the word of truth, then God approves of your doctrine. Study to show thyself approved unto God, a workman that needeth not to be ashamed, rightly dividing the word of truth. And it's looking at the doctrine. You can study all the Bible and preach all the Bible anytime you want in regards to instruction. But with doctrine, you must ask yourself the time period, who he's addressed to, and what is the faith that's being addressed to? Judaism, Christianity, tribulation, millennium, Old Testament. And so on. That's the only way you can allow the Bible to say what it says to whom it's said. Then verse 28, the children of thy servants shall continue, the children of Israel of thy servants shall continue, and their seed shall be established before thee. That's the promise of the Abrahamic covenant, the everlasting covenant between God and Abraham, which is mentioned in Psalm 105, verse 9, 10, and 11. That's an everlasting covenant. And that's with the remnant, the Jewish remnant that believes in God and fears him. And at the end of the tribulation, they are the ones that receive the promise. So here is a Jewish prisoner praying, crying out to God while in prison, asking God to intervene for him. But then, during that prayer, even though they've got him bound in prison, they can't get your mind until they start doing mind control stuff. You see, which are already doing it. But still, the thoughts can be focused on God, and thou wilt keep them in perfect peace whose mind is stayed on thee. Okay, so I only got one psalm there, 102. The next ones are rather large, so...